And you're listening to the iTeach podcast. I'm your host, Andy Boyle. In this clip, Dr. Vega, a certified futurist, leads us through a quick demonstration of a strategic foresight exercise. If you're interested in employing strategic foresight for your school or district strategic planning, you can find Dr. Vega's contact info in the episode description. As always, please be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss any episodes. And if you like what you hear, write a review so other educators can find us more easily. Now, here's the clip. And until the next episode, cheers.
So, strategic foresight. That's what you were getting.
Alley-oop.
We didn't have it. So let's talk about what that means.
What is that?
Tell us all about that.
Right now, when you sit down in a strategic planning meeting, often you'll be writing goals that are very reactive to immediate problems within your context. Okay, it's not usually that you're trying to leap forward your institution or your organization or your school. So strategic foresight is really a creative process that a team goes through in order to imagine possible futures. Okay, so it's not future predicting. All right, so you've implied that we're predicting the future here, but it's really saying we're going to design our future to go in a certain direction. We're going to try to influence the future or our future to be a desirable future instead of letting the future happen to us.
You don't have a crystal ball.
I don't have a crystal ball.
I can fix that. Let me jump on eBay right now.
Let's make that happen.
That sounds like I think that would be a wonderful Christmas gift for Anissa, a crystal ball.
So it's a strategic creative process where as a group we'd sit down and maybe first we would talk about the past, you know, so that you can see the patterns of the past and how fast things change.
Right.
Right. So if we all went back now and we thought about how did you communicate with your grandparents when you were a kid? Andy?
So I grew up in Dallas, Texas. Mm-hmm. My grandparents were in Atlanta, Georgia. So it would have been a rarity to have a phone conversation because long distance was expensive.
Okay.
And we certainly were probably lower middle class growing up. So we didn't make a lot of, so there were handwritten letters.
Okay.
Oftentimes there wasn't that communication minus a birthday card, Christmas card, something along those lines.
And roughly what time period was this?
The 80s.
Early 80s.
Early to mid 80s.
Okay. Yeah. And what about you, Stephanie? What time period was this?
Yeah, so this would have been like late 80s to early 90s. I grew up visiting my Mimi and Papa and being at their house almost every day because I got the bus at their house and they still had a rotary phone.
Okay.
but we communicated either by phone call or very frequently the same by written letter, snail mail. And it's interesting, I've sort of boomeranged back to that point because now neither one can get up to get to the phone or hear very well. So if there's something of dire import, they are not connected to the internet in any way, shape, or form. I have got to send a written letter. And almost now have gone to using typing with a very large font so that I can ensure that they can see it. So that's the current communication. But now, you know, a couple of my grandparents have, well, and I'll say really just one, but one of my grandmothers will text. But that's, you know.
That's it. Yeah. Hannah, since you're still in the studio, tell us about
I could tell you about
how did you communicate with your grandparents when you were a kid and roughly what time period was this?
This was in the 90s. I spent summers with my grandma, and she babysat us. And so that was a lot of our communication with my other grandparents. I used to go over there on the weekdays after my dad picked me up from school. We would stop by and visit with them. I was really close to my cousins, so we did spend a lot of time face-to-face with grandparents. I don't remember talking on the phone with them often. Great grandparents, and I do have to preface this with, I have young grandparents, so this was this is very different, because I feel like they were in the know. I mean, they were in their late 40s, early 50s when I was a kid, so they were around a lot. But my great-grandparents who were out of town, we just got cards from them. That was our one and only communication.
I'm hearing face-to-face, written phone calls. We at my house, we had a Sunday afternoon call with my Nana every week, right? So it was scheduled. She was expecting it. We would plan around that phone call.
Yes,
you kind of had to, right? Because it wasn't mobile.
No.
And oftentimes still, there weren't
many
machines
didn't have,
to...
Yeah, answering machines answering when
machines,
I was a kid.
Yeah.
That was a late-breaking thing when I was in middle school.
And when I was a kid, it was fun, imaginative to see the Jetsons have this video phone and how, like, out of this world that seemed, you know, and how so far would that ever happen in our lifetime sort of idea. You know, thinking, will I see that before I die is what I was thinking, you know. But my kids today FaceTime their grandparents, text their grandparents, you know. So they, if there's a letter writing happening, it's usually because it's a birthday card with $10 in that envelope. But there's not otherwise really much letter writing happening, you know, snail mail.
Right.
So if we look at the past, we can see the rate of change and how it changed faster than we anticipated, right? So you have to have that in mind when you think about the future. You might think that a hologram coach dropping into your classroom is, you know, will that happen within my lifetime? But if you imagine it's going to happen at least twice as fast, you know, than what you can imagine, that's probably more realistic.
Sure. How cool you mentioned hologram coach. And I had never even thought of that. But there, people pay to go see hologram concerts, right? For even people who have passed.
Yeah, and we have somebody on our team that's developing that right now. I don't want to spoil it. But
okay, so.
Well, they probably didn't hear that. So you didn't spoil anything, good. Whisper bug over there.
Well.
ASMR, ASMR.
So anyway, so we first look at the past. We got to get into the mindset that things change faster than we expect, okay? Then we want to look for, we want to start setting the stage for what the possibilities are in the future, okay? And to do that, we look for drivers and signals. Drivers are trends, things that we already see people adopting. Those things are pretty likely to influence our future, okay? But then, on top of that, we want to look for signals. These are individual instances that have not caught on massively, okay? So we don't know what the likelihood of these signals are to influence our future. They're just hints that it might go this way, it might go that way. And drivers are already things that are adopted,
permeating,
and have a heavy influence likely on what the direction of the future is going. So let's think of some trends first, some of these drivers that we can look at.
Are we gonna do this for education or something else?
Let's do K-12 education.
Let's do K-12.
Okay. So one trend is online schools, right?
Yep.
These are becoming normalized. People are using these. We had mass, really fast adoption rates, but actually it's kind of started to
level out
out a bit.
Yeah, I would say, in addition to that, though, like the instance of hybrid dual enrollment or a hybrid homeschool with virtual, you know, online school has definitely increased. So where that has sort of leveled from a fully online experience, the blend of those opportunities, I think, is shooting up.
Sure. Some other trends that we see, there continues to be a teacher shortage, right? This is a trend and a driver that's a concern. We also see another trend of concentration of population in metropolitan zones increasing.
People are still moving to the cities.
Moving towards the cities still. So that's leaving rural areas with less and less resources. Think of some other drivers.
I think another driver would just be in telecommunications in general. I think that with, you know, fiber sort of permeating without the need for above ground, you know, that people's access and solidified access is a little bit different, and those webs continue to expand.
Sure. some other drivers we see?
I think of mobile devices still. Mm-hmm. I think, availability and the usage of mobile devices is continuing to rise.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know that I know anyone as an adult that doesn't have mm-hmm. a phone or an iPad or a mobile desktop, laptop mm-hmm. computer.
Okay, but to play off of that, they're now coming out with those phones don't have access to that kind of things because people are getting concerned
right.
about their screen time.
So that would be a signal.
So there's a signal. Will that have an impact?
Tons of funding on Kickstarter for things like that.
Yeah, and my phone tells me all the time about my screen time. So I've been trying to be more aware of I think people are trying to get more actively engaged in face-to-face mm-hmm. connections with people too.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, I think that school shootings are a trend, mm-hmm. not a signal.
I agree.
Are a driver now.
And I think that trend has led more people to evaluate homeschool mm-hmm, opportunities mm-hmm. or hybrid opportunities for their own kids.
Yes.
As a parent, that certainly gives me cause for maybe entertaining the idea of something that I would not have otherwise.
Or smaller school environments.
Absolutely.
Right. So now let's talk about some signals. We talked about one signal mm-hmm. related to the phone that doesn't have all of the connections bells and whistles.
Right.
What are some other signals, unique things that we've seen happen, one-offs?
I don't know if this is necessarily a one-off, but I do think that people having this sort of revolving work schedule or learning schedule has increased in at least my viewpoint lately. So people who are doing teaching in the middle of the night because they're teaching in China. Mm-hmm. I'm using VIP Kids as the signal for that because it's taken off like gangbusters. I don't know that that's permeated everywhere yet.
So VIP Kids could be a signal.
Right. That specific thing. And I think the undertone of that signal for me is this idea that really we have a global time clock. Mm-hmm. it's really not anymore based on your time zone or...
I learned that teaching the MOOC.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, what about dual jobs? People have Etsy shops. People go and work after they get off work. I think a lot of people
So that would
now
be a trend or driver,
again,
right? So because I think if you can't speak to a specific, example that stands alone, then I wouldn't necessarily call it a signal.
What about this?
So I think of bell scheduling and just traditional K-12 scheduling.
Yeah.
I know,
But can you think of an example, one specific? Signals are harder for me, honestly.
They are harder, but let me give you, I've got one. Okay. So there is a new device that you can purchase at the beta store. They've been selling it there for 2 years or something. It's a little headband that you put on your head.
Uh-huh.
And the first time you put it on, it learns your brain signals mm-hmm. as you fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And then it learns your brain signals as you wake up,
mm-hmm.
right? With time, it learns what your brain signals are when you want to fall asleep and when you want to wake up. And now you can use it to set a bedtime and a wake-up time so that you feel like you put the device on and
it puts electrical waves.
It tells you when your body is ready to go to bed?
The response of your brain.
It stimulates your brain to fall asleep when you want to, and then to feel like you naturally wake up.
We have that already. It's called wine.
Not the same.
Oh,
not
my
the
bad.
Same.
My
to
bad.
Keep you asleep through the whole night as well. Now, it learns and then, creates those brain waves, replicates those brain waves within mm-hmm. within your own head.
Mm.
If we are learning mm-hmm. and it learns what brainwaves we're using when we're in the process of concentrating and learning.
Mm-hmm.
Can
right.
we not use that same,
stimulate
put on your headbands.
Our brain mm-hmm. to learn.
It's an actual thinking cap.
Right.
Right?
Put on your thinking cap.
Put on your thinking cap and you can imagine
right.
that it would help especially with attention deficit or ADHD or possibly, just a rough night.
Right.
So that's a signal that there's this device.
Yeah, this singular device.
This singular device that's learning
how
you
sleep.
I want
to learn more about
that.
Yeah.
So what we just did there, though, was we took this idea of a signal, sleep, this learning, this device that helps you fall asleep, which is a signal that really exists, and it's one unique example. And then we took some other trends of ADD mm-hmm. and focus, And we combined those to come up with a possible future of a thinking cap.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. So that's one possible future,
right.
This thinking cap device. And we could then strategically plan mm-hmm. a school around what happens, you yeah. know, right. when...
We need a class set of thinking caps.
We need a
write that into my IAP. IEP.
We need to readjust our... Now, I'm not saying a school system would do this, but no. let's stop funding textbooks and instead let's start funding research on the thinking cap.
Right.
Right?
Interesting.
So it's these futures that we come up with. And as a team, you would gather all these signals and drivers mm-hmm. that we just said. Maybe we'd have them on a post-it note if we were in a face-to-face environment. Maybe it would be, you know, on a ThingLink or something.
Padlet wall or something.
Padlet yeah. wall if we were doing this virtually. But you collect maybe two or three of these signals and drivers together, and you imagine where those became the main drivers of the future. What does that future mean for your right. context, mm-hmm. right? And we sort all of these radical futures that we come up with, and we sort them out according to desirable and undesirable. And you want to plan away from the undesirable. What can we do today to prevent that thinking cap from becoming a mind control device or from negatively influencing the schools, mm-hmm. right? What can we plan today such that it doesn't go in that direction, that we go where it's a helpful device?
I was all excited, and then you just scared me with the mind control. And I had these flashes of all of these nefarious organizations and
right.
getting a hold of this and programming, because, you know, there's all these conversations about bias right now in AI. Does it exist? And if we have bias and we design the AI, is our own biases, how do we say that plural, Dr.
Biases.
Vegas?
Bias.
Oh, no, I got
it. You can just say bias.
Our own bias. Are they then written into that AI? You know, there's a lot of talk about that in AI right now.
Absolutely,
so what?
Yeah.
So, oh my gosh, if we had these nefarious, you know, if Dr. Evil got a hold of
character. Hacked into
my thinking cap.
Your thinking cap. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Would my students shoot lasers
on freaking shark's head
out of their eyeballs? Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Well, and then if that thinking cap.
Did y'all just did everyone listening just envision me doing the air quotes when I said
lasers,
because you should have,
because I did. Lasers at
holy cow.
Sharks with freaking laser beams. That's the
holy
best movie.
Holy cow!
All right, anyway,
I was
back
referencing
to topic.
Something else.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to.
No,
I didn't
no,
mean to get
good.
You off track, because that is my role here, is just comedic break.
Well, and so coming up with these futures, they should be radical. They should be wild. They should get your team really excited, mm-hmm. laughing. Having fun, but also getting you out of this comfort zone of just reacting
right.
to your drop by 2% on the end of course test in social studies.
Absolutely.
Like moving beyond that. Like, where are we really going to go?
Right.
Is there a horrible scenario, you know, that's possible with social media and school shootings, which we have been seeing in the news? Had we future envisioned what the possibilities were for that 10 years ago?
Oh my gosh. Could we have
prevented, you know, tragic things that have happened in this past
week?
Well,
and I think too, like, if we tie it back to how schools and districts plan, what we do right now is identify problems of practice. We come at everything from a deficit perspective of, like, what's not working, and then let's only change those things that aren't working. But working against what? Working against the current model? And why are we only trying to reimagine things that are not functioning to some set of barometer statistics right now?
Right.
And nothing about our current strategic planning processes look at other interdisciplinary fields.
That's right.
Right? And their influence on us.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing about it is looking at the field of medicine or the field of communications or the field of technology and economics.
I love that you bring that up because I just, one of my former soccer players and students is getting married. And this weekend we had a bridal shower dinner. Mm-hmm. And these are kids from the class of 2007. So they're turning 30 now, you know, in that age. And they're some of them are married. Some of them are not. Some of them have careers. So I was speaking with a former student and I said, you know, what are you doing these days? And he sells robots. He's in medical sales. Mm-hmm. And he sells robots that go in and do hip and knee replacements, mm-hmm. right? And when doctors go into surgery, he suits up and goes into surgery with doctors and tells them how to
use the machine,
use the robot to create these. It said they're the only company in the world that does this right now. 3D imaging, CAT scans, all this crazy stuff. And I was like, dude, mm-hmm. that is so crazy. What did you go? He went to the University of Alabama. Mm-hmm. I said, what did you major in that led you here? Business administration. He's just got a plain Jane business degree.
Well, and I think that it's really important that universities and departments with programs within universities, Kennesaw State's we see little pockets of this happening here. So mm-hmm. they're going to have to design degree programs for future jobs.
Right.
So the idea of a robot medical salesman.
In future jobs that we don't even know are going to exist in the future right now.
Exactly.
How do we prepare our kids? Right?
Well, I think that's also why we have to move to a competency-based transcript, right? So that as you need to add additional small sets of skills, almost like endorsements and certificates onto your bachelor's degree.
Right.
You know, so that he could have like robotics as an additional certificate to his business degree, as well
right.
as medical and,
right.
and surgery. It's not that he's becoming a surgeon or getting the
by
education
no means is he.
Of a surgeon, but getting a small group of coursework or competencies
right.
in order to be the best qualified person for that job.
Absolutely.
He probably got on the job training.
Oh yeah. Cause it, and he told me, I said, I'm so intrigued by your story. It's just me talking to him Saturday night. I said, I would almost like to invite you to come down and speak to, you know, my wife is a high school counselor, to talk to, if not the students, but the counselors, to talk about I'm so curious about your path. Mm-hmm. Like, how are we leading our students today for these jobs that I guarantee you in 2007, if you had said to him, what do you think the odds of you driving a robot during a knee replacement in an operating room, what are the odds of that happening? It would have been zero to none.
But, you know, on a less life and death scenario, I mean, I'm the same way. I went to school to be a Spanish teacher.
See. Si.
Right. And like, yes, education is the core foundation of the work I do right now, but it's also everything and nothing to do with what I do right now. And
right.
I think what we need to do instead of trying to help kids plot their path from square one is make them super pliable and super flexible in all environments. And it's a different and like people keep saying 21st century skills, like subtitle. Stephanie's so annoyed with everything that says 21st century. Like we're in it. Stop saying that. It's so lame.
It's not forward.
Right.
It's
not forward.
It's yesterday. Even.
Right. And like when people are like, you know, the new push towards blended. It's not a new push. Like, stop saying that. however, if we stop focusing on these, like, you know, the four C's and the 21st century skills, and if we just say, like, yeah, it's a yes and. If we have a yes and mentality about how we prepare kids against mastery, then it's all yes. It's all equivalent to better possibilities and flexibilities and, you know, futures
it's
for them.
It's more
right.
for them to be able to navigate
that's
that
right.
flexibility and to
that's
learn
right.
new things on demand.
That's right. right.
And to know how to acquire new skill sets.
Right. Okay, so, you know, what we just did there, we had already gone from here's this wild future.
Right.
And now we've brought it back to what do we need to be doing in the K-12 school.
Right.
We need to be creating these flexible kids.
Right.
That's what they need for the future.
Right.
How are we going to design our school and the experience of learning at our school such that these are really flexible,
right.
lifelong learners
and
who
that it
know
values
that they're going to
have
to constantly learn.
Right.
Because their jobs are going to constantly change.
Right.
Correct.
Like subtitle, that
right.
doesn't mean rubricing kids to death.
Yeah, yeah. And how many times do we see kids these days, right? Signals.
Yes.
No, this is
this
a driver,
is
a trend
yes.
right? Kids aren't staying at the same job for 20 to 30 years like our folks did, right? We're not getting a job and retiring from said job. Right. These kids are, they're constantly searching. They're constantly moving.
Right. And if we look in retrospect, we can also see what the value of strategic foresight could have offered us, right? If we had done this 10 years ago and we had seen when Netflix was just booming, you know, really starting when they went from mailing you the CD or the DVDs and they went online, right? That right there, where you have this on-demand, pick your programming technology in the entertainment and communications industry, we could have anticipated what could hold true for the future of personalized learning.
Right.
That personalized learning was going to be a thing. It had actually been first announced, or someone had idealized it or conceptualized it back in the 1970s.
That's right. Yeah.
And it really hasn't come, you know, it's just now I feel like getting the feet.
Well, it's a critical mass,
it
right?
Needs, yeah. That
and
to,
this
to
is
really
what happens
forward.
In every field, but I think in education more than anything, people wait for critical mass. When there's more people who are either open to the idea or trying to move it forward than are not, and then everything goes hog wild. And what I'm going to caution people, and like this is coming from somebody who truly believes in the promise of personalized learning for everybody, okay, don't just jump on board the bandwagon without hiring it in to do a job for you. That's what people, that I think that's a mistake that's made in education more than any other field, is that you hear something and it's kind of buzzy and you're like, oh, let's do this now.
There's $10 million right. worth of Gates funds.
Let's do it. And then what people are doing is wrong practices, procedures, policies, and pedagogies, and saying that that's personalized learning in order to secure funding. It's the same way now that we're seeing people go nutso for STEM and STEAM and STREAM and add another letter and we're at school. So stop chasing the dollars based on what you're calling things and actually investigate what this is and see what an impact that could have.
So that's something that iTeach could offer in the future.
Absolutely.
And I think that's where our department, iTech faculty, could really support better.
Absolutely.
With iTeach. And that is where schools need funding, right? They have a problem, and they think personalized learning is the answer.
Right.
Well, what are the grant options available in that? Where could research support what we're doing such that data informs our decision and the design of our model?
Right.
And collaborate in that way.
Yeah.
And that's something that might.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and we're
evaluation.
Game for it now. Like if somebody out there listening is ready to do that work, let's do it. It's just unfortunate that usually we don't hear about these things until they've already moved them forward in sort of a hodgepodge way that's difficult
and then,
to untangle.
And then the ask is to fix.
Right. And we just don't like
lead.
That call. Like we will take that call. But
and
we don't love
that
call.
That call.
Yeah, we do. We do a fine job at the fix.
You do more than a fine job.
But I would much rather be on the front end of somebody's initial thinking, and not because we have it all figured out, but we will ask you the hard questions that we have asked ourselves. Like our commitment to our partners is not that we're going to lead you to glory. It's that we're going to take you to the mud and get dirty with it, so that when you stand up again, you know what it's like on the wrong end. And know how to prevent that from happening, or at least feel very aware of what the possibilities are so that we plan best moving forward.
Right, right.
So and you could see how even participating in strategic foresight with your team, looking at the future, a possible future that you want, right, for your school system and the futures that you want to avoid, and how could you seek funding to help you move towards those desired
or
futures.
Reallocate existing
or
funding.
Reallocate.
You know, that's
absolutely.
Part of what strategic planning ultimately accomplishes is to justify budgets.
Right. And that's, so there's actually a tool you can use in strategic foresight called the second curve, right? And it's looking at what services, products, or aspects of your school system are on the decline, not helping, not serving, and how can you reallocate those resources such that they start building instead your new services, your new processes, your new model, such that you're not actually spending more, you're just shifting
and
helping move in
that
new direction.
That clear eye on ROI, on return of investment of things, you have got to have a very keen understanding of what you have spent money on as a school or a district and what it's doing for your overall impact, both with teaching and learning and all the resources that go into it. And I think instead of marrying to the philosophy that we're going to have X, you know, textbook adoption every year for the next gajillion years, or that we're going to have X playground construction team for everything. You know, people like to have a solid list of vendors or a solid list of things. And what I'm saying is, like, stop doing that, because you need to be able to exit people just as quickly as you enter them.
Right.
And really hold everything accountable.
Rate of change.
That's right. And that's why, you know, again, like, we want to do that. We want to have that kind of accountability for the people we partner with, because that's what I would expect from anybody that I was paying. Like, I want to know that. You
right.
know?
But that also requires an attitude of, we're not already perfect.
Right.
Right. Right. And often when vendors are trying to sell something, they have to sell that they're perfect. Mm-hmm. Right. And having a growth mindset as a company, or you're not a company, you're a
unit.
Outreach unit.
A unit.
An outreach unit of the university. Yeah. That, you know, you still have to sell your services.
That's right.
And to say, we're great now and we're going to always be getting better.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
We don't believe in perfect.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And truthfully, that's the way that, you know, we've got a couple of RFPs that we're working on responding to right now. And, you know, I keep kind of untangling that, because there is this, like, feeling like you have to push forward and have an answer for every single line item that they're requesting in the
RFP.
When in actuality is, like, maybe some of the things that they're requesting aren't the best things. And I want to leave room in our proposal to say, there's got to be space for us to challenge a little bit of what you're asking for. If we know that research is driving something different, or that futuring is really what the model is that we should be following, not this, you know, whatever else you're doing. Right. So it's hard, because it really is not only that we want to be hired, but we also want to hire others that we think are going to be great innovation partners. And that's a difficult dance sometimes.
Yeah.
Sense.
So if you want to have an easy place to find signals and drivers that are multidisciplinary, right, all the fields, I have a news app called Futurism.
Mm.
Okay, it's a black square with a white box in it with a black F in it. Mm-hmm. Just a simple little black F. And
they're on Twitter also.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it's a great tool that I can just pick up real quick and find signals and drivers. Mm-hmm. Every morning I just give it a little scan. And the idea that your team would develop a future mindset, mm-hmm. after practicing strategic foresight frequently, you would then also be scanning, just always seeing what's out there as new signals and drivers, mm-hmm. and being aware of what could influence the future, so that when new ideas, you know, somebody's probably going to take this thinking cap idea.
Oh yeah,
steal
you
this
should
idea.
Patent that thing right now.
I've already got a copyright.
Hilarious. But I do think that from a leader and a manager and a director perspective, if I put myself in the position of a principal or a district superintendent, that means that I have to prioritize the allocation of someone's time to be able to do that. Like, it's a huge, I mean,
you
yes,
mean to scan?
Well, I mean, I think it's a collective responsibility, right? But unless it's a specified role, mm-hmm. that multiple people take on, then it's not going to happen.
Well, I do
and
think it's
what
a cultural
now,
perspective.
Right? It is. But I think right now everybody gets busy. Like, busy is the four-letter word that's going to kill current paradigm of education, I think. But everybody's so busy that they don't have the time, another four-letter word that's going to kill it, to do the work that needs done. They're just trying to maintain systems. And I think to set the priority and the culture around, listen, this is what, like, challenge yourself and everything you hold to be true and self-evident. Like, every day we got to try to find cracks in the hull of what we're working on. That's just a different mindset that you have to be able to make very comfortable for your team, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. And I feel like going back to that, you know, leadership allowing educators to find their passion and to follow their passions.
There's someone in your school who would love to be the
scanner. There's someone,
that's right.
Absolutely. In your building, in your district, that is passionate about the future of education, and not only where it's going, but in driving where it's going, right? I don't want this to happen, and I want this to happen. And what can I do as an educator to push it in the direction that I would prefer to see it go?
Right.
I got to think that there are people in buildings that, I mean, we're all passionate about education, and that's why we didn't get in it for the paycheck. So
no, So I got my training in strategic foresight from the Institute for the Future out of Palo Alto, California. It's a nonprofit. It's a little pricey of an experience, so it's not something that you would send more than one person for your district to do, or just bring in someone like me or other strategic foresight experts to help you with that.
Right, because once you kind of get it, you can kind of go about yourself and maybe just check in periodically, make sure we're on the right track and we're still doing it correctly.
Have an on-demand check-in with your futuring foresight practitioner.
Futurist.
Let's
give everybody your phone number, Dr. Vega.
It may or may not be a part of what I've currently built into the language of bids that we're replying to. I think that if we can get exposure to you, Anissa, and this process to the districts that are coming on board with iTeach for coaching in general, that's like a wham, bam, two count punch that almost makes it an ideal scenario for both the leadership level and for the practitioner level.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. All right.
Sounds good.
This was great, guys. Futuring with Anissa.
What is that acronym?
SFF. That's what we have.
SFF.
Strategic Foresight Facilitator.
Andy, I'm telling you what.
iTeach Live is produced by the instructional technology coaches from iTeach at Kennesaw State University with the cooperation of the Instructional Technology Department, the Bagwell College of Education, and KSU Owl Radio. You can reach out to them for more information, questions, or comments at their website, iteach.kennesaw.edu, or on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at KSU iTeach.